This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2019, held at Faith Builders from July 29 through August 2.
Well, good morning.
Good morning.
It's good to be here with you again. I don't know what you think when you see a young person driving a truck like this. When it's my non-Christian neighbors, I'm not surprised. Now, this truck is more than a means of transportation. It's also a value statement, and maybe that's true of all vehicles. It says something about what has captured the owner's heart. I'd like to suggest that when it's one of our young people, we ought to feel sorry for them and sad. Sorry for them, not because of the brand, but we should feel sorry for them because haven't they been given something bigger, something better? Sad that we haven't been able to inspire them to something better. This is a picture of Grandpa. Grandpa showed me how to retire well. I don't know what you think about retirement. Probably depends on your age, huh? Or maybe you're where you come from. But Grandpa showed me how to retire well. He was administrator at Penn Valley Christian Retreat for 5 years after he left the farm. I think he was about 65 maybe when he left the farm. And went to Penn Valley and was there as administrator for 5 years. Grandpa and Grandma enjoyed it immensely. I think the staff enjoyed it. A real blessing there. And then after he was done being administrator there, he was principal at school for 5 years after that. So he'd have been 70, I think, something like that. And he was brought into the school, not necessarily in an academic role, but only ladies had been teaching there for the last number of years, I guess, at that point. Maybe not quite. But it wanted someone to help provide some leadership there and maybe deal with some of the issues and so forth. And he was a blessing there. But he wasn't always that way. When Dad was in his teens, Grandpa was not a supporter of the church. Dad remembers that communion time was a time of tension. He disregarded church direction. He was on the fringes. Don't think he was ever excommunicated, but on the fringes. This man, who's also named Corey, just like my grandfather, who's passed on to his reward, was a man I much admire for his godliness, his humility, and his compassion. And it's because of this man that my grandfather is now in paradise, awaiting the resurrection of life, rather than the resurrection of damnation. According to what Grandpa told me years ago, this is the man that God used to bring him back. And he's not the only man that talked to Grandpa. The preachers had tried to talk to Grandpa many times. And a number of years ago, I went and asked Corey, "So, what did you say? I want to know what you said." And I waited too long. Corey's mind was still with him here, but and he remembered the incident. He remembered he went and talked to him, and he remembered he was scared to go talk to him. How would you, wouldn't you be scared to go talk to a brother in church? Probably similar, same age. Maybe Grandpa's slightly older, I'm not sure. It's not really part of the church like it should be. What do you say? And he doesn't remember what he said, so we won't know what he said. But he had the courage. He had the courage. It wasn't even his responsibility. He wasn't ordained. It wasn't his responsibility. He could have said, "That's not my problem." But I think he knew the one. He loved God, and he loved people. And this is the kind of man we want our children, our students to be. One who loves God and loves people. Corey just wasn't interested in that truck. This is what we want our students. Not, "You can't have that truck." No, but they're not interested. They have something so much better. So what is the state of your school? Is it an interesting place where students are stretched, challenged, and prepared for life? Is it a place where students are called to something greater than themselves? A place where they see the shallowness of the world, the futility of popularity, money, and fads? Is it a place that is valued in your community? As a teacher, you can do something about those questions. If you can answer affirmatively, you can continue to nourish these values. If you answered negatively, you can impact and turn your school in a good direction in these areas. And today I'd like to think about how we can strengthen our schools. We have 3 points that we want to look at today in this presentation. Number one, increase the academic level or maintain a rigorous academic level. A danger in having a series of talks like this is you repeat yourself too much, maybe. But I just do want to be very clear. In all my talk about discipleship and selling the church, I am not trying to diminish academics. That is our job. They're not an afterthought to the real stuff. If what you really want to be is a counselor, then don't be a teacher, a school teacher, okay? I mean, be a school teacher. And you can do some counseling, perhaps. I think it's good if your school is hard. If the students in your school, yeah, it's hard. It has to be a place where students are stretched. If it's just easy, you're probably going to deal with a whole range of things that you maybe could avoid if it'd be a little bit more difficult. Learn proper lesson prep. And, you know, I'm speaking to the choir in this talk. But I don't know. I don't know how you do in your schools. Do you just get up and, okay, open the textbook, okay. We are ready for lesson 39, and let's see. Why don't we read this lesson, and let's see what it's about. It doesn't take much prep that way. It's happened at our school. And you could even have time for another job after school if you do it that way. And I don't know, maybe that never happens in your schools, but it has happened in our school. Do you know the objectives of today's lesson? Have you put in the thought of how you're going to reach those objectives? How will you know when you reach them? Know how to lay out a course and teach it effectively. If you don't know that, you should be taking Peter's breakouts. Those things are important. Get outside the textbook. Do local field trips. It doesn't have to be big things. We're close to the Pennsylvania Main Line Canal. And there's a little stretch as it goes through the Lewistown Narrows there where the canal is preserved. And you can walk in the old towpath and there's a couple of placards there. And when I do Pennsylvania history, we go down there and we walk that. And some of my students have walked before and some haven't. It's not a huge, great deal, but hey, you might as well walk. Imagine that. This is what put Lewistown on the map. We have Greenwood State Park. They had some iron furnaces there. Just a variety of things. Get hands-on. Teach the joy of this versus the screen. One thing we do in life science in junior high is we raise and butcher chickens. We just know that every 2 years, chicks coming, and they're going to need to raise them and butcher them. It's the best project I ever did with the least amount of work from me. It's just wonderful. They do the work. And I always tell them, if the chicks die, that affects your score. Anyway, they do pretty well with it. Our schoolhouse is right close to the meeting house. And so, obviously, if you have something like chickens, they have to be taken care of on Sunday as well. So not near all our students come from our church, but those that go to church there Sunday morning, well, somebody needs to take care of the chickens too. So by the time 8 weeks rolls around, they are good and ready to butcher these things and get rid of them. But don't fall for the fallacy that having high academic standards means having the latest technology. High academic standards does not mean having the latest technology. I'm old enough to remember the time before internet. And I remember when it became accessible. And I remember reading about something called the digital divide. There's this digital divide. And there was this big concern. What's going to happen is that the poor children are going to be left behind because they don't have access to the internet. And the rich kids are going to get access to the internet, and it's just going to increase this divide, and they're going to have so much advantage because they have access to the internet. And then I came across this article. New York Times. I think this was last fall, October. The digital gap between the rich and poor kids is not what we expected. America's public schools are still promoting devices with screens, even offering digital-only preschools. The rich are banning screens from class altogether. Here's a part of the article. It wasn't long ago that the worry was that the rich students would have access to the internet earlier, gaining tech skills and creating a digital divide. Schools ask students to do homework online, while only about two-thirds of people in the U.S. have broadband internet service. But now, as Silicon Valley's parents increasingly panic over the impact screens are having on their children and move towards screen-free lifestyles, worries over a new digital divide are rising. It could happen, and this sentence just really stood out to me, it could happen that the children of poor and middle-class parents will be raised by screens, while the children of Silicon Valley's elite will be going back to the wooden toys and the luxury of human interaction. Silicon Valley, the tech hub of the United States. Another article from the New York Times was entitled, "A Dark Consensus About Screens and Kids Begins to Emerge in Silicon Valley." Let me read a bit from that. "The people who are closest to a thing are often the most wary of it. Technologists know how phones really work, and many of them have decided they don't want their own children anywhere near them. A wariness that has been slowly brewing is turning into a region-wide consensus. The benefits of screens as a learning tool are overblown, and the risks for addiction and stunting development seem high. The debate in Silicon Valley is now about how much exposure to phones is okay. Doing no screen time is almost easier than doing a little," said Kristen Stetcher, a former social computing researcher married to a Facebook engineer. "If my kids do get it at all, they just want more." And Athena, I have no idea how to pronounce her last name, who worked as an executive assistant at Facebook and is now working with Mark Zuckerberg's philanthropic arm, said this, "I am convinced the devil lives in our phones and is wreaking havoc on our children. And she does not let her children have cell phones until high school." Now, maybe that sounds like, well, that's too soon, but I'm saying these are the tech people. "And even now bans phone use in the car and severely limits it to home. She said she lives by the mantra that the last child in class to get a phone wins." Working at Facebook. And then other parents are like, "Aren't you worried you don't know where your kids are when you can't find them?" And she said, "No, I don't need to know where my kids are every second of the day. And I don't know if this issue is for the young people or the old people. It might be the parents that are the problem. I mean, back when I was young, I went to CBS, lived in Pennsylvania, drove to CBS, 18 years of age. There was, I don't know, six or eight of us. A guy from church loaned us his van, and I was 18 or 19, and we drove to Arkansas. I don't know, 19 hours driving, drove right through, and so probably left on a Friday evening or Saturday morning, I'm not sure exactly, and got out there Saturday night, so probably left Friday evening, and I think I probably usually tried to call my folks by Sunday afternoon to let them know I made it, and no contact the whole time through. Now you can't go anywhere, and 2 hours later your folks are, "Hey, where are you at? Everything all right?" Maybe not, but these are not some Christian cranks. These are tech people. And sometimes it seems like we try hard to catch up with society. And then about the time we do, we find society has discovered the wisdom in what we had been doing. So I just offer that. High academic standards is not equated with latest technology. Think of skills graduates should have. Reading, speaking, financial, writing. Work on those things. This past year, I was at a church, and a young man was a song leader, and he was clearly better than his father. I think his father must have led a song too or something, but this guy was better than any of the others. And after church, I was talking to his dad, and I said, asked him how his son had learned, and here's what his dad said. He got that at school. I never had a chance for that. That school is providing something for that congregation. It's providing value for the church. Now, you may be part of a situation that doesn't place much emphasis on academics. And I came from a community like that. The Corncob College is a term I learned as a student. And not everyone. Grandpa valued education. He sent his children to high school back when it was frowned on. But to give you a little idea of what it was like in our community, my oldest brother, there's four of us. My older brother was the first boy to graduate from high school from our school. I was the second one, and the brother after me was the third one. So it wasn't a lot of emphasis on it. But even if you're in a situation where there's not a lot of emphasis on education, there must be some recognition of the need of academics. I mean, if you have a school anyway. Otherwise, there would be no school. And I think it's true to say most of us would have a school even if it were not required. We can say, well, they have a school because we're required to. Yeah, really? Are you sure? I don't think many people enjoy boring sermons. And I do think most of our people think our children should learn how to read. That's pretty basic. And that's maybe not much of a vision. But build on that. By emphasizing the need for schools to support parents and promote the church, I'm in no way trying to advocate that we as teachers merely echo the practices or values of our communities. We can and should impact those practices and values. Sometimes we need to change practices because we see that if we change the practice, it will actually help our values. And sometimes we as teachers need to help our communities see that a quality school will help pass on our values to the next generation. And it depends how long you've been teaching. Don't go, if you've been teaching 2 or 3 years, 4 years, you go home, we're going to revolutionize the church. It's probably not going to work. Okay, you got to take your people with you. But if you do well, you will gain an audience eventually. And so in our seeking to serve parents and promote the church, we at times push in certain directions. And I do believe that increasing the academic level in our schools or maintaining a rigorous academic level will strengthen our schools. Number two. Encourage parental and pastoral involvement. Encourage parental and pastoral involvement. Yeah, I don't know what it's like at your school. Do your parents come? Do your pastors come? Well, if you're going to do this, you can get up and give them a talking to that you should show up at school. And maybe they need that sometimes. But if you want them to come, give them something to do. I taught school for 3 years and quit the year I got married and then taught again. But during that year that I was not teaching, I didn't visit the school once. And it's not that I didn't care about the school, but I had other things to do. And it feels sort of weird to go back if there's no, I mean, what would I have done there? I could have just been a visitor. I know, I could. But have them come in for chapels or classes or parties. I often tell my parents at the beginning of the school year, you're welcome to have birthday parties for the children in my classroom. You can have it more than once. That's wonderful. I mean, if you need a reason to come. And the chicken butchering, I said it's not much work for me. or chicken raising. The children do the raising, but the butchering is not much work for me either because of moms. And I have one that goes ahead with it and others that come to help, and then usually the others, the ones that don't want to help still want to be there. So I say, well, you could bring in lunch for our room. And so, not all the time, but often there's a high percentage of the moms that are there. macrame. You know what that term is? Macrame? I faintly remembered doing something like that in school. You twisted things around. You could make this stuff. Yarn, I guess you use or something. And you make plant hangers or something, and you could make different designs. And I remember doing that in school, and I thought maybe the art has been lost or whatever it was. And here I found out one of my moms, oh, yeah, she does that. And, yeah, she was willing to come in. And so I had her come in, and I don't know, maybe three periods or something like that. Three times she came in, and all my students did macrame. And I think it's sort of neat how you can make that yarn go in different ways and so forth. I didn't try to have some academic thing with it. But this mom was coming in here three times. She came to do that. And if you want them to just drop in on classes, let them know. When's the best time to come? I mean, it happens sometimes. You come in the afternoon and I don't know how your schedule is, but it's most fun, at least I would think so, to come and be there when a class is being taught, watching your students take a test. I guess you can see classroom culture and so forth, but let them know when the best time is to come. And help them develop. I think particularly of your board. Your board. Now, you might say, well, you're under the board. I know. But you are also full-time teachers, right? You can't expect, I don't know, maybe your boards are wonderful, and they have vision and passion about the school, and they come and visit pretty often. But most likely, that's not the case. They might not show up at school. But they got jobs. They got other things to do. Help them develop. CASB. How many of you are familiar with CASB? Conservative Anabaptist School Board Institute. Okay, now how many of your either administrators or board members or pastors go to that? Okay, maybe slightly less than what raised their hand. One thing I did back when I was principal, I encouraged the board to go. And you can encourage. You can only encourage. You can't tell them they have to go. But maybe if you go with them and make it a trip together. And we did that. And not all of them went, but our board chairman did. And what just struck me, when it was time for him to retire from the board, he had served long enough he couldn't stay on the board, he said, I am just going to miss going to CASB. And I was like, yes! Yes, wonderful! And he'd gained a vision by going there. It impacted his vision for the school. And I think, yes, that is your job. As you can, in your place, encourage those kinds of things. Don't demand them. Challenge your pastors to preach about school. How many of you remember one of your preachers preaching a whole message on Christian education? Raise your hand. Well, if they need ideas and want to preach. I would encourage you to go home and sometime this year suggest it to them. Would you preach? Have you ever thought about preaching on Christian education? Why do we have the school? What should we be doing at the school? And give it a suggestion. You'd like to hear from them. And maybe next year you can suggest it again. And maybe in 5 years you'll hear one. I don't know. Maybe they'll be glad to. But you can be the ones to bring that to the fore. So encourage parental and pastoral involvement. So having a high academic standard and encouraging parental and pastoral involvement can increase the value of our schools. But we need more. And I think my last point is the most important because it has the greatest impact on the school. And it's something you all can do something about. Develop as a teacher. Does Jesus know what he's talking about when he makes statements? Of course. Stupid question, right? But do we actually believe it? A disciple is not above his teacher, but everyone, when he is fully trained, will be like his teacher. That's Jesus. That's not my opinion. we cannot have a good school without good teachers. Teachers are more important than your building, than your curriculum. If Jesus knew what he was talking about, this is huge. What kind of teachers do we need to be? I'm going to give you four characteristics. Ideals, perhaps. Not to discourage you, but to inspire you. And I give them to you as a fellow teacher. I'm in the same shoes. And as a parent, and as a pastor. Christ-like. Christ-like. If what Jesus said is true, this is the most important point. If a trained student becomes like his teacher, then the teacher must be someone we want our children to become like. And I say this with a great deal of inadequacy. I have faults. I have issues I'm working on that I really hope my children, my own children and my students avoid. And, you know, I don't know of anyone who doesn't have some faults like that. Yet we as teachers need to model what it means to be a follower of Jesus. In love for God. Building the kingdom of God or the church should not come up from a commitment to an ideal, but rather a love for the King. And I need to grow that. You know, I can say these things, but I've been convicted this week. I need to deepen my love for God. A love for others. We love God as much as we love those around us, particularly the church. It's his body. We need to model what it means to be a follower of Jesus in relationship. We need a personal relationship with God. And that relationship requires what any relationship needs: common interests and time. We can
say, so you must have your Bible time,
quiet time with the Lord. And you can do it sort of as a good luck charm. You know, I had a flat tire on the way to school because I should have had my time with the Lord. That's a wrong viewpoint. It's a very wrong viewpoint. But we can also then say, you know, I don't believe that. I just commune with the Lord all the time, so I don't have time. Well, you don't have to spend time with the Lord every day. You don't have to. Unless you want to know him. Unless you want to know him. We need to be examples in humility. Philippians 2:8, he humbled himself. Humility when we think we have the answers. Humility when we know we don't. Serving as a servant because he did. Did I see it on a board somewhere, on a wall somewhere here, a picture with a saying, you know you're a servant when you're treated like one and you're okay with that? I think I saw that somewhere on the wall here. We should be an example in idealism. Don't be a negative teacher. You need to be an example in idealism. Jesus was this. He prayed for Peter. He knew that Peter would betray him. He knew what Peter would become. We need teachers that can see what should be or will be, not just what is. And let me just say this. If you as an adult have been involved in child abuse, don't tempt God by teaching children. With confession and repentance, there's forgiveness. Forgiveness is not synonymous with trust. There are other ways to serve God. A former drunk should not work around alcohol. And I have a quote here that I've had for a number of years. It's about church leaders with significant moral failure. But I believe this quote applies to school teachers. It's from John Angel James, as quoted by Charles Spurgeon. Here's the quote. When a preacher of righteousness has stood in the way of sinners, he should never again open his lips in the great congregation until his repentance is as notorious as his sin. I think there's something to that. And I think spiritual disciplines can help us develop Christ-likeness. We heard about them last year. If you were here for, I don't know, was it Teachers Week or October workshop? I can't remember when it was. Arlen Nisley talked about spiritual disciplines. And someone has defined spiritual disciplines as practices found in Scripture and that have been practiced by Christians since biblical times that promote spiritual growth. It's not just anything you make them to be, but these are things, look, we're not the first people that have wanted to follow the Lord and know the Lord. Learn from people that have gone before. What have they done? And I'm indebted to this book, Celebration of Discipline, by Richard J. Foster, about the spiritual disciplines. It's a book you need to read and take the good and leave the bad. He has a different view of the Bible and its commands for us. I disagree with him heartily. But he does talk about different spiritual disciplines and gives a lot of just really stuff you can do. Stuff you can do. And he's a bit paranoid about, you know, not making this legalism, and maybe too paranoid about it. But I do think it's worthwhile reading. Very readable, challenging. And the challenge is, do we do it? Do we do what Christians used to think need to be done if we're going to know Christ? We're qualified to teach, not by our intellect, but by our character. It matters who we are. So we need to be Christ-like. Convinced. I mentioned this yesterday. What do you think about your church, your heritage? Jeremiah 6:16. Thus saith the Lord, stand ye in the ways and see and ask for the old paths. Where is the good way? And walk therein, and ye shall find rest for your souls. And then the part that makes this one of the saddest verses in the Bible, but they said, we will not walk therein. Today's society believes in new and improved. Yet there are old ways. Ways of God that bring life and rest. Have you personally embraced these old ways? Where are you as a teacher? As Anabaptists, we have a kingdom heritage. Our forefathers emphasized following rather than just believing. They sought to live as part of the kingdom now. And I maintain that much of American Christianity is about making it to heaven rather than living in an obedient love, faith relationship with Jesus. And again, I want to just say, I'm not saying the real Christians are all in our background, in our group. I don't believe that. I believe there's real Christians in many Christian faith traditions. But are you embracing this heritage? Are you walking in those old paths in life-giving ways? And I'm not suggesting that you just adopt them. It doesn't work that way for me. It is okay to wrestle and question. I remember saying, you have to question everything. Question everything. And then that maybe you'll end up at the right place. I don't know if I'd quite say it that way anymore. But through struggle, we can come to belief. And we must come to belief. We can't just stay in the struggle. I don't know. That's the safest place. And that's it feels like the safest place maybe. And sometimes the easiest place. Well, I can see the problems with that. I see the problems with that. And I'm not sure about this. But no, you need to come to belief, at least on the big issues. And as teachers, we cannot give what we don't have, so we need to be convinced. Is this enough? Is it enough to be Christ-like and convinced of kingdom values? Does this qualify us to teach? I've asked congregations if these qualifications are enough to be a carpenter. I have a bit of carpenter experience. I framed in a closet my brother-in-law's house, and I helped put trim up in our when we were adding addition to our house, or at least I held the trim while the carpenter used that, whatever you call it, nailer or stapler, or whatever you use for trim, and anyway. But I have some experience, and I think I'm trying to be Christ-like. So if next summer I have some time, would you let me put an addition on your house? Yet sometimes, is this all we ask of someone teaching our children? We want them to be godly. We want them to be part of the church. And you're willing, you can teach. Now, of course, we all know that our houses are way more important than our children, right? But do we act like it? Is it enough to be Christ-like and convinced? I think we also need to be competent. We need to be competent. We need to be able to teach. Not everyone makes a teacher. Not every godly person makes a teacher. People have differing gifts. We need to be able to relate well both to students and parents. If you can just relate to one or the other, you're going to have trouble. And gifting is important. But yet we need more. We need training. You're not just a carpenter. We have the gift of carpentry. Well, yeah, you probably have some gifting of working with your hands, but you got training. And your community might not agree with this. They might be willing to hire you as long as you're willing. They might put someone in charge of a classroom of children with less training than someone in charge of building a house. Now, you must recognize the need for this. You're here. And I'm not saying you need a degree, though that might be helpful. But it does mean you need to take advantage of training opportunities you have. Come to events like this. Come to summer term. Now, yesterday, there wasn't many raised stood for coming to summer term. And maybe they're all sitting here. I don't know. But I'll just say from my personal experience, I immensely enjoyed and benefited from summer terms here. Both as a single and married man. And I think it's true to say that it's because of those summer terms that I'm here, that I'm still part of the church. Through the teaching and mentoring I received. Now, maybe I'm odd. I used to say that my dream job would be to be a professional student. My job would be to be a student. That would be just wonderful. You could just study this and study this. Maybe you don't find that as an ideal for you, but one of the joyous memories of one summer term was taking American history, and we used Paul Johnson's A History of the American People, and we got to read about 50 pages a day. It was our assignment. So I get my other work done, and then, oh joy, I could sit down and read 50 pages of this. And it's a fascinating book. You ought to read it. Paul Johnson's A History of the American People. You can skip over the boring parts. Every book has some boring parts. But seriously, if we're going to be good teachers, we need to be good learners. That's a word, learn, anyway. But good learners. If we have no interest in being a student, I don't want to be a student. Then why are we a teacher? Maybe we should stop teaching when we stop learning. Learn from experienced teachers, but take the time needed to learn, whether self-taught or formal training. Get the training you can for the sake of your students. Remember, you're not merely building a house. You're impacting eternal lives. So we need competent teachers. We need committed teachers. These things call for long-term staff, just like in most professions. I don't know what the carpenter crews in your area are like. Do they get new people every year or two? Maybe every 3 years? I think the quality of work's going to suffer. Why do we think it's any different here? And I said earlier, as a teacher, you need to earn the right to speak into your community. And I don't think the idea that it takes 5 years is too long. I don't know if that feels like 5 years of teaching. Well, you're all probably there already. Or a lot of you are there. Maybe you're 10 years, 15 years. Your community needs to know you're committed to them and their well-being, that you share their core values, or at least that they aspire, or what they aspire to value. We need people that are committed to a place rather than just space. Came across an article like that. Christianity Today, the places will stay. And the writer talks about living in Salt Lake City, where the addresses are all based on the distance to the temple. So you know how far you are from the temple. Whether you're Mormon or not, Everything is based on how far it's from the temple. And I'm going to read some from this article. I think I'll take the time to do that. The geography of a place affects how we live and what we're oriented around. While we may not have an address that overtly acknowledges a place's culture or religious center, our places nevertheless revolve around ideas, values, and institutions. Places form us. Our habits of constant movement, from our car-centric lives to our distractibility, shape our souls. For example, as a whole, we are a nation of commuters, drawing us away from local communities. Commuter culture puts us in the no man's land where we're untethered from community and place. We exist in boxes of our own consumeristic makings. We choose the song or podcast and the temperature. Our online habits similarly move us away from human connection and into liturgies of consumption. While our experience of technology is complex, let us not think that the way we spend our time, whether in cars or on our phones, would bear no imprint on our souls. Our commute affects our souls. Well, if what Brubaker was saying this morning is true, then The problem with our commuting or internet usage isn't just environmental or social, it's spiritual. What is the allure of space over place? When we choose space over place, we believe we're choosing the path of freedom. Here are more options, more purchases available to us, more connections with real people behind screens. We imagine that freedom is a life without constraints. Yet freedom is never a freedom from, it's a freedom for others. Our temporal habits that put us on autopilot not only inhibit our creativity, but also numb our souls. As we detach from real people, real places, and even the ordinary moments of life, when we choose space over place, in other words, we also lose our spirituality. The spiritual life is always a concrete, embodied life. Might we reimagine freedom to be less about me and more about us? More about choosing, when we can, the rooted, specific, concrete over the abstract. Like Adam and Eve, we want to press against our limits of time, body, and place. We chafe against the particularity that God has given to each of us and yearn for the freedom to decide these details for ourselves. Yet there's a higher call to stay put, rather than running away from place or problems. And this means we have the invitation, as Scott Russell Sanders says, to align oneself with the grain of your place and answer to its needs. We need to commit, not to ideas, just to ideas, but to a place, to people. And our communities need that. Demonstrating long-term submission to your community enables influence. If you demonstrate long-term submission to your community, you can influence your community. And we need men and women who commit to long-term teaching. You know, there's a shortage of teachers, I hear. Fortunately, we have not struggled with that so much in our school lately. But you know, if all of you keep teaching for the rest of your lives, that will make a difference. And I'm not saying you all need to teach. Okay, so now God's calling is that you do this for the rest of your life. And there is value to it. Have some that teach for a couple years and then go on. We need some old ones. We need some young ones. But we need people that are in it long-term. And if your community would like for you to teach long-term, be frank about what's needed. Salary. Ask for what is necessary. Did you hear what I said? Ask. It is okay to ask. I did that. They asked me if I would teach after I was married and... Well, I thought I'd want to come to Faith, graduate from Faith Builders first, do this 2-year program before I would teach. And but I said, well, maybe if you could give me, I won't say what amount it was, and also pay summer terms at Faith Builders, maybe I'd consider it. And I thought it was sort of unreasonable. And I think the next Sunday, the guy came around and said, we took you up on your offer. Oh, well, I wasn't quite sure if I had offered, but you need to live. If you're going to raise a family, they need to pay it. Even if you're not raising a family, you're going to need a place to stay. You're going to be old sometime. Now, and I say, with this, though, be willing to be an example of simple living to the rest of your community. And I don't think we, as teachers, should be able to work 10 months and make a living. I mean, what other occupation can you do that? Now, maybe some of you are working at school all summer long. That's fine. That's wonderful. You should be paid for that. But let's not make it that, no, we get 2 months of vacation. There's value in us having a job like most of the others in church have during the summer. More than just the money that comes in. Okay, so this is what it would be like. Imagine doing this all year round. Makes you thankfully. Anyway, training. You need the training that you need. There was an older man at our church, served in the North for years. Back in the 50s, he went to college. It was part of our church, but went to college. And I asked him, so what's his view of higher education? He just said it this way. When you go into the bush, you need a sharp axe. Spending several years to train for a lifetime of teaching is not too long. So make use of the opportunities you have. And support, you're going to need support. It's tiring to teach. And other jobs are this way too. Let's not make, we are the heroes. We got the hardest job in the community. No, not necessarily. But it's encouraging to talk to others in the same job. And it's hard to do it in your community if you're of a small community. So go to teacher events and ask your school to pay for it. Explain that this is not just, oh, you'd like to go. No, you need this. This is necessary. Explain why it's necessary. Don't assume that you can't teach long term without giving your community a chance. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. So in order to strengthen our schools, we need Christ-like, convinced, competent, and committed teachers. I'm still going to give you a turn and tell time. I know we're running a little bit later here. But here's what we need to think about. How can you increase the value of the school in your community? Go ahead. All right. We might need to stop that now. I know it's too short. But lunchtime is coming here. And you can continue your conversation at lunch because you're older. You're not junior high students, so you care about this. It won't change as soon as we're done here. But if you would like to stir your thinking more on what your school could be, I would encourage you to read an essay called A Servant Education. This is something fairly new, and I think FB has it in their latest newsletter, and there's some laying right around the corner. So the first one's out, then you can grab one. There's probably more available. It's a servant education. This essay is a collective effort by 7 administrators of conservative Anabaptist schools who believe that our schools have a rich opportunity in this generation to serve our churches and homes in their God-given calling to be the hands and feet of Jesus in the world. To this end, the essay is dedicated with the hope that it will seed ongoing discussions throughout our communities about how to best mobilize this resource for God's glory. If you want to stir your thinking, I'd point you in that direction. So may our schools be places that turn the hearts of our students away from the shallow glitter of the world and toward a love for God and others. I'll turn it over to Jonas.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.